fighting for America.
This is like playing poker with a guy who cheated you twice before. You know who does that? A moron.
Fighting for Idaho.
Well, you ever been to Idaho?
You know, it's funny you say that. Just this last autumn, I was up there on an elk hunting trip.
Did you get anything?
I did. I got the biggest elk I've ever gotten before in my life, and enjoying that on a weekly basis in our freezer.
Fighting for you.
I went and got engaged, so yeah, I kind of got a little bit of a life, but you know, not one that would be enough to ignore the Kevin Miller Show.
Boise's Mr. Right.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning. Welcome to Thursday. Kevin Miller in the Morning. We're just gaining momentum, getting up to altitude. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Joined by our great friend, Mark Kerkorian from the Center for Immigration Studies. And, you know, when this judge made this ruling, I'm sure you knew this, you were on the nationwide feed, whether it was CBS, NBC, or ABC, and you're going to go, well, of course I know that, Kevin Miller, because I was interviewed by the reporter. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What do you make of the latest here with this federal judge now under siege?
Well, I mean, of course, this is what the you know, left is going to do. They're going to try to make him the issue. But, I mean, I don't know. I think his ruling is going to hold up, his temporary ruling, because that's all this is. The thing is, what I'm afraid of is that the administration apparently is exploring going ahead with the amnesty in the 24 states that didn't file the lawsuit, which is not what the judge's order permits, but they may just go ahead and do it anyway and see if they can get away with it.
Well, and judging by their past history of make it up as they go, Mark, what do you think? Will they get away with it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll see if they have the, you know, the stones to actually try it, because, I mean, this really is starting to push the envelope. But, you know, not to insert an unrelated story that's not in my area, but, the, you know, if Hillary can take millions of dollars in payments from foreign governments while she's Secretary of State and keep a straight face, then it wouldn't surprise me if the administration tries this kind of basically brazen defiance of the law, and figuring once it gives people work permits, they're not going to take them away anyway, and so they will have won.
Mark, no one likes to, you know, rip the country, rip the administration, but the truth is being told here at 580KIDO that sooner or later they're going to push the envelope past what they should. And will somebody defend the Constitution? In the old days, you'd say, well, Kevin, are you filling in for Bo Greitz on the Bo Greitz show? And this is happening now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Congress needs to stand up here. This isn't just a matter for the judiciary. I mean, the courts are acting, but, you know, the Constitution and the balance of the, you know, separation of powers is premised on the idea that the three branches of government will defend their own prerogatives. And what you're seeing in Congress, unfortunately, is the Democrats, you know, willing to see the Constitution usurped as long as it's their guy doing it. There were seven Democrats before the president actually announced his illegal amnesty who said, you know, this was that he shouldn't be doing it, that it's a violation of separation of powers, that it's not the way laws should be made. And yet every one of those seven Democrats is voting to defend Obama's ability to do this illegal amnesty that they supposedly were against. But they only said that because it was election time. They wanted to appear like they were, you know, defending the Constitution, and now that they're safely, you know, they're safe from the people, at least for six more years, you know, they're back to doing what they want to do, which is basically that the end justifies the means. If the president wants something, a policy objective that he can't get through lawfully, then it looks like, and I hate to say this, but their Democrats in Congress are willing for the president to act unlawfully as long as he's doing something they approve of.
Mark Kerkorian with the Center for Immigration Studies here at 580KIDO. Will there be any repercussions? You know, this is dangerous territory where we're talking about, as you've said, and I can't continue to repeat this again and again, the importance of this, that the president could is making up the laws as he goes, as he's floating these trial balloons, saying, I'm going to do whatever I can within my power.
Yeah, and that's the issue. It's presidents have done this a lot. I mean, there's always been executive. The executive has always kind of tried to push the envelope. The problem here is that the president isn't really pushing the envelope anymore. He's kicking his way out of the envelope and just making stuff up and, essentially ruling by decree. And this isn't just immigration, because, I do immigration for a living. I think this is real important, but what we're talking about here is actually way beyond immigration. This is, whether our constitutional order actually functions the way it's supposed to function, or whether, and I've spoken to sort of ordinary Obama supporters who have, put it this way to me, or whether once the president is elected, if he's, legally elected, and Obama was, he won fair and square, that means that for the next 4 years, he gets to do anything he wants. And that's kind of the way a lot of the people who, seem to have voted for the president think it works. And it doesn't work unless Congress lets him get away with this, in which case, it may sort of be the way it does work from now on. And maybe when we have a Republican president, then he'll say, well, look, we have to change the tax code. It's important. We can't wait. Congress hasn't acted. So I'm just telling the IRS to go and do what I want regardless. And if Congress doesn't like it, they can, pass a law and implement these reforms that I'm demanding.
Well, again, it's constitutional law by the president, not how it's written in the Constitution, as you've said, Mark, by the separation of powers.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, ironic from a supposed constitutional law lecturer at law school that he's, basically just making stuff up. I mean, look, he really is a progressive in this sense. And I use progressive in the sense that, 100 years ago, the progressives, Woodrow Wilson, for instance, are probably our worst president, at least up to now, our worst president in history, shared the view of President Obama that the Constitution basically is, it's out of date. It's a 18th century buggy, and we can't bother even following the requirements of the Constitution to change it, because the Constitution obviously can be changed. We've changed it a bunch of times, 27 times, through amendments. But the progressives, 100 years ago and apparently today, seem to suggest that the rules, even the rules for changing the Constitution, are out of date. And so it just has to be changed kind of by fiat. And once we get away, we, meaning the progressives, get away with changing it, changing the way we do things, if we get away with it, well, then that's the new rule, the new law, and regardless of whether it actually followed the rules for amendments in the Constitution.
The Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org, Mark Kerkorian with us as we continue on. Why is the president going all in on the illegals?
Well, it's a good question. I think there's I think the basic issue is that he wants a legacy. He wants to leave a permanent mark on the United States. I would see that in a kind of bad way, but I mean the point is he wants a legacy. And Obamacare is one of his legacies, but that's turning out to be not particularly successful. And on immigration, there's also the issue of, I think to some degree, he kind of feels guilty because he's never really cared that much about immigration. He had the chance in his first 2 years to pass anything he wanted because he had super majorities in Congress. He didn't do it. He's been leading on the open borders activists for a long time. And he agrees with what they want. It's just that it was never a real high priority. Now, because he has nothing else, he can leave as a legacy as he sees it. And I think to some degree because he does sort of feel guilty in having lied to them and strung them along for 6 years, he now figures, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going ahead. I don't have anything else that I'll be able to leave as a legacy when I leave office.
Well, and you're a nonpartisan guy, but it seems like this is the resume tour. We're out of Iraq. We're out of Afghanistan. Never mind the little details that's going on there. We've got the jobs. Never mind that people are working two jobs and it's counting as one. Or as you point out at CIS.org, for every new job, there's two new immigrants. And that's since 2000, 9.3 million new jobs, 18 million new immigrants. So those are the ones that we know of.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, yeah, and that's probably a pretty good number because that's not just illegal immigrants. That includes illegal aliens. So, I mean, it's a pretty we're pretty confident that if that number is accurate, that we have taken in twice as many immigrants as jobs have been created. And so what that means is that all the new job growth over the past 15 years has gone to immigrants. Now, it doesn't mean Americans haven't gotten jobs. Of course, Americans get jobs, lose jobs. Immigrants get jobs and lose jobs. But on net, all the new job growth, the net growth in employment, has gone to immigrants. So what that means is because there's more American workers now than there were then, there's even more Americans out, not just out of work, but not even looking for work, basically dropped out of the labor market altogether. It's really problematic. It's not necessarily caused by immigration, but why are we taking in more people, flooding especially the low-skilled job market, when there are more and more Americans who have completely dropped out of the job market? It's just, it's crazy.
It is. It's the great betrayal of the American worker, not to go vintage Pat Buchanan on you at 580KIDO, but let's talk about the forces behind this. Big business. Big labor and the Chamber of Commerce?
Well, big everything in some sense. In other words, all the big institutions of our society are opposed to meaningful immigration enforcement. You know, this is, like you said, it's big business and big labor, but it's, you know, it's big media, it's big philanthropy, it's big religion. Frankly, what this really highlights is how immigration isn't really a right-left issue. I mean, in Congress right now it is, but it's much more a up-down issue, elites versus the public, because even because among ordinary voters, there's even very, very large shares of Democrats who want, you know, stricter immigration enforcement. This doesn't mean deporting all the illegals who are here. That's a kind of a that's a question that muddies the issue. The question is, do you want a limit on the number of immigrants let into the country, and do you want that limit enforced? That's kind of the basic question. And at the elite levels, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, people at the top answer that no, really, in their heart of hearts. People, ordinary folks, working class, middle class folks, regardless of what they think about abortion or taxes or guns, answer that kind of question. Yes, of course, we should have limits on immigration, and of course, they should be enforced.
Mark, please stand by. More coming up with Mark Akorian, Center for Immigration Studies. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO.
Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Not only do we have to win this legal fight, which we are appealing very aggressively, but ultimately, we're still going to have to pass a law through Congress. The bottom line is, Jose, that I'm using all of the legal power vested in me.
There we have it, the President of the United States saying what he's going to do to legalize the illegals. Mark Akorian with us from the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, are we going to survive the next 2 years?
Well, we're going to survive. The question is, you know, what's the country and the political culture going to be like at the end of that 2 years? And a lot of that is going to depend on whether the president exercises, you know, restraint. And I'm afraid that he's not going to, and we're going to end up with a very, not just bitterly divided, but a political order that is in tatters. Because, you know, how does a political order, you know, a constitutional order maintain itself? It's not that everybody every time is checking what the rules are, opening up law books and asking judges to decide. A lot of it is all the various political actors restraining themselves, not pushing the envelope, because that would be, you know, that would be risking rupture of the system. And unfortunately, the president doesn't care. He doesn't care. He is going to try to do everything he can get away with. So this is why the next 2 years is going to be dangerous. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we're, you know, this is sort of we're in a kind of situation where, you know, the end of the Roman Republic 2,000 years ago. And I'm just it's very disturbing, completely apart from the substance of immigration policy.
Mark, let's talk a little bit about the Republicans. There's been reports that the Senate is trying to backdoor the amnesty to try and renege on all the promises that they made during the election, the House and the Senate, basically trying to surrender to make this all go away and get on the illegal bandwagon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm torn. Sometimes I think, you know, that is the case, that the Republican leadership, Mitch McConnell in the Senate and John Boehner in the House, basically just want to let the president get away with the amnesty so that they can blame him for it, but that at least it'll be out of the way. But, you know, at the same time, they really have been, it seems like they really have been trying to do the right thing. In other words, to deny money to the president to run this amnesty of his. And what's happened now is the Democrats have all held firm in trying to enable, let the president go ahead with his amnesty and not turn off the money, because that's the power Congress has, to turn off his money. And so what they've now decided is they're going to separate the Homeland Security money bill, which is what's at issue here, and pull out the amnesty thing and have that as a separate vote. How that's going to play out, I don't know. But ultimately, what the president seems to be saying is that if I don't get my way on either immigration or anything else, you Congress are not allowed to cut off the money, because if you do, I will veto it, that government agency will close, and I will blame it on you, and so you have to do whatever I want and give me money for whatever I want, otherwise I close the government agency and blame you for it. That seems to be the situation we're in, and if that's the case, then Congress really has turned into a kind of advisory body rather than a lawmaking body. And that, I'm afraid, that's the way the president does see it, that Congress isn't in charge, which under the Constitution it is. That's why it's Article 1 of the Constitution. The president is like the CEO. Congress is the board of directors that tells him what to do. Unfortunately, the president doesn't see it that way. He sees himself as both the CEO and the board of directors, and the Congress is kind of an advisory board that gives him advice, and he'll take it or he won't take it, but it doesn't really matter to what he does. That's very dangerous.
Here, speaking of the president, here's what he had to say at a recent town hall.
As a people.
But what are the consequences? Because, you know, how do you ensure that ICE agents or Border Patrol won't be deporting people like this? I mean, what are the consequences?
Look, the bottom line is that if somebody's working for ICE and there is a policy and they don't follow the policy, there are going to be consequences to it. So I can't speak to a specific problem. What I can talk about is what's true in the government generally.
So here we have the President of the United States instituting a policy of not deporting people, and then you have this guy from MSNBC saying, well, what if they follow the law and do deport people? They're going to be fired.
Yeah, and the fact that he has to say that really is is an expression of his own frustration, because all three government unions that relate to immigration, in other words, the unions representing Border Patrol agents, representing the ICE agents, who are the guys inside the country enforcing the law, and the ones representing the USCIS adjudicators, the ones who process the green card paperwork and all that. So there's three unions that represent those workers. All three of them are on the record consistently as saying the president is exceeding his authority and making our members do things that are illegal. And so the president and his people have been frustrated for years that the actual guys out in the field, the ones he's now threatening, have not been, as enthusiastically carrying out their open borders policies as they would want. And what the president, you know, the very fact the president had to say that is an expression of how frustrated he is. So, you know, this is one of the reasons I have hope, is that the actual professionals in the offices, you know, the bureaucrats basically are the ones who are, you know, maybe holding the line on this and saving us. And we see that even in court, because one of the two big lawsuits, the one that we've just been hearing about in the news, was filed by 26 states. But the other lawsuit that's been lurking out there and it's going to come back has been filed by ICE agents, saying that the administration is basically put them in a position that they have, if they keep their jobs, in other words, to keep their jobs, they have to violate the oaths they took to uphold the law, and that the judge has to stop the administration from forcing them to do that. And, you know, that lawsuit may yet come back. And I think that's also part of the reason the president made that kind of threat, because he knows that yet another judge may be ruling against him in the not-too-distant future.
Mark, we always appreciate your great work at Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Treasure Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller. KIDOAM.com. 580 KIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
Kevin Miller with you here at 580 KIDO. Coming up, one of the anchors of MSNBC loses it, plus the latest on the Department of Homeland Security and the domestic terror threat, and in Idaho, are you ready for self-driving cars? If you missed Maggie's news moments ago, there you had the president, or I'm sorry, the governor, maybe he could be president one day, signing that $3 million emergency bill to fund the Idaho Education Network until the end of the year, which is a good thing, but it still goes to question, where is the money going to come from? Is it 50 million, 20 million, 30 million, the 60 million owed to make sure the internet is still plugged in the state schools and agencies? We'll talk about that in a minute. Joining us now, Jaron Halpern of Fox News Radio, and we always like talking presidential politics, and there's no better forum to talk about who's going to be the it factor than CPAC. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning.
You know, one day I hope to go to CPAC and maybe perhaps be one of the muckety-mucks, or perhaps just kind of hang out in the hallways and watch the muckety-mucks.
Well, you certainly would have to have trudged through some brand-new ice and snow today to get that opportunity.
I'm sure it's worth it when you look at the lineup.
You know, it's always, you know, a test, and I think obviously more so this year than last year, with who's going to run for president and having to make the case. There's certainly going to be those that are going to be, you know, very warmly welcomed. People want to hear from guys like Ted Cruz. Rand Paul always does well at events like this. Dr. Ben Carson speaking right now. All guys that could potentially run for president. Speaking tomorrow will be Jeb Bush, who really is seen as the front runner, at least on the Republican side of the ticket. And CPAC goers are often a little skeptical about that establishment pick, about the, you know, coronation process. So expect that to be a well-listened-to remarks. And, in fact, a little bit different that they're doing at CPAC this year. In addition to making some remarks, the speakers here, particularly those who are considering presidential runs, are actually going to have to face questions that are asked by CPAC goers. And Jeb Bush, among others, has decided to forego any prepared remarks and only spend his 20 minutes on stage answering those questions. So an opportunity, I think, really to try and begin this process, at least from the conservative base, certainly the CPAC crowd different than some other events that, you know, you're going to have to do through the primary process. But this certainly will be a test, especially for guys like Jeb Bush, who are trying to win over conservatives, and especially those grassroots conservatives who have some doubts about his conservative credentials.
Well, it's hard to believe that here we are in just barely 2015, and we already have Jeb Bush as the front runner. And this is the year to be at CPAC, because next year we'll be involved in the primary process. And if the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have their way, we'll have a nominee already, Jared.
I'm not sure by February we'll have a nominee. It's possible. It will certainly be whittled down. You're absolutely right. It was actually CPAC 2012, early in the presidential primary process. Last time around, Mitt Romney came here to CPAC amongst some skeptics and described himself as severely conservative. So you're right. This is an opportunity, particularly for those establishment-type guys, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, who's speaking here as well. He spoke here last year as well, who can come and try and exhibit just a little bit of sort of that conservative core that the CPAC crowd wants to hear.
Jared Halpern with us live from CPAC, Fox News Radio at 580 KIDO. So we have Bobby Jindal. We have, you know, Jeb Bush, all these others that you've talked about. You know, are there any other issues that are going to be talked about? The guy was thinking about Rick Perry as well, among the others. Any other issues at CPAC? And does this place really resonate for people outside the people that cover politics as heavily as you, Jared?
Well, I think people that are, you know, Republican voters, conservatives care about it. And so they want to hear what these folks have to say. And like I said, I think they're going to be interested in the Q&A that is new to the event this year. It is one step in the process. I don't want to put too much stake into, you know, if you have a bad CPAC outing, your hopes are dashed. Conversely, if you have a great CPAC outing, you're not going to be, you know, ordained the new front runner, so to speak. But it's certainly another opportunity for guys like Scott Walker, guys like Bobby Jindal, to get some national exposure, give these national type addresses, these national type stump speeches to try something that if they move forward in this process, they're going to have.
What's it like to be there as far as, is it the equivalent to being at a convention like the RNC or DNC?
It's much smaller than that, certainly, but it takes that feel on. You have certainly the party aspect of it. If you go to sort of exhibit hall, as it's called, there's a lot of people hawking wares, and you'll see people in the tri-fold hats. You'll see people in costumes. You'll see people passing out literature, college kids, young conservatives particularly, trying to get the older crowd more engaged in issues that are important to them. So there's certainly that sort of a political festival feel to it, but it's also a serious grassroots meeting. Much of what happens here at CPAC are training seminars on trying to build grassroots and how you go about doing that in political communication. So it's a mix of both strategy session and political carnival. It's got a little bit of everything over the next couple of days.
Final thought here. Who are you more pumped for, Walker, Cruz, or the Trump?
Well, I mean, listen, as a political reporter, nothing would delight me more than Donald Trump running for president. I don't think that's going to happen. He'll come out here. He's actually speaking here at CPAC, and I'm sure he'll drop many hints that he's considering a run for president. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, if you look at what's going on with his businesses and television shows, there's an awful lot of hints that he is not running for president. Sarah Palin will also speak here at CPAC. I'm sure froth up the crowd to drop hints that she is going to run for president, and I think the easy money, the safe money, is on both Trump and Palin sitting out the 2016 process.
Well, or we could just redo
It would be fun to cover.
I tell you, we could redo the Celebrity Apprentice and the Presidential Apprentice.
You know, they have re-signed the Celebrity Apprentice for a new season. Maybe that's what they have. Maybe that's what they have planned.
You know, Jared, our vote is for you.
If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not.
Have a great time, Jared. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Our great friend Jared Halpern joining us, Fox News Radio. And by the way, if you want more CPAC coverage, our friend Sean Hannity is live at CPAC today and tomorrow. And you can catch Sean right here, 580 KIDO, your home for Sean Hannity on the radio. Now, coming up, an MSNBC anchor loses it at a commencement ceremony. And if a conservative, we just have to share that with you. That'll be coming up after news and traffic here in a minute at 580 KIDO. But let's get back to this other thing. Now, imagine you're a police officer on the beat, and the mayor of your town, the governor of your state, tells you that we're going to pass a new law that the speed limit is 85 miles an hour. All right, 85 miles, sometimes on the connector. No, not during morning or rush hour or afternoon traffic, but, you know, sometimes middle of the night, 85 is the speed limit on the connector, okay? Well, maybe not the connector unless you have one of those fancy cars. On 84, there we go. Let's say you're heading out to Mountain Home, headed on the highway, looking for adventure. You know what I'm talking about. So you pull someone over who's going, you know, over 85 or going 85. And the speed limit really is posted at 65, okay? 65 miles an hour. And you write that guy a ticket. You write that lady a ticket. And the mayor, the chief, whomever, says, I'm sorry, you didn't follow my made-up law. This is how there's the law, and then there's the real law. That's what we're doing with something much more devastating when we're talking about immigration, where ICE agents, as you heard earlier, if you didn't, you can catch it on the podcast at 580kido.com with Mark Acorian of the Center for Immigration Studies, where Border Patrol, ICE agents are being told if you deport people, you could be fired. Don't take my word for it. Here's the President of the United States.
Because, you know, how do you ensure that ICE agents or Border Patrol won't be deporting people like this? I mean, what are the consequences?
Look, the bottom line is that if somebody's working for ICE and there is a policy and they don't follow the policy, there are going to be consequences to it. So I can't speak to a specific problem. What I can talk about is what's true in the government generally. In the U.S. military, when you get an order, you're expected to follow it. Doesn't mean that everybody follows the order. If they don't, they've got a problem. And the same is going to be true with respect to the policies that we're putting forward.
Mr. President,
well, you got to love this guy. You don't follow my order, you got to go. Is that a president or something else? 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Let's get you to traffic now.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up next hour, Senator Risch will join us. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Coming up, one MSNBC anchor loses it. And imagine if a conservative said what she said. She's actually advocating that somebody beat the blank out of somebody else. If a conservative said that, they would be fired. Again, another example of exposing the double standards. We go to Travis in Boise. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Kevin. Hey, the reason I was calling is because I'm a police officer, and your comment kind of struck home with me that, you know, when I took on my oath was to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the laws of the state of Idaho. And if I had a chief or a mayor or someone else trying to tell me that I had to disregard those laws, then I would have a major issue with that. So I ended up getting fired for it. It would be an interesting court case.
It would be. When you hear the president speak like this, you said it hits home.
It does. Because it's, you know, that's, I take the oath that I made very seriously. Because that's what I've chosen to do. I'm from a law enforcement family, and I've got tons of law enforcement. And I'm tired of the new kids that are coming into the force, because they are complete yes men. They have no minds of their own. They only do what they're told, and they don't think about the fact that they really do have the power to stand up for themselves and stand up for what's right, and to honestly uphold that oath that they took to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state.
Travis, thank you for the call. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
All right, we appreciate it. Very, very strong comments. Look, the president is making up the law as he goes. By the way, we promised you a wacko from MSNBC losing it. Here's the belle of the ball, Melissa Harris-Perry, everybody.
I hope he tried to stay alive. I hope he knew that he lived in a state with a stand your ground law, and I hope he whooped the out of George Zimmerman. Yeah. And it's not his reputableness. Because he killed him. That our bodies and voices never forget that we are artists. That white bodies become black bodies when they creatively imagine themselves as a black body, a body that is vulnerable, that is shed of its privileges. That hetero bodies can become queer bodies to the extent that they are willing to lay down with their queer brothers and sisters by shedding our privileges. That male bodies become meaningful bodies, not when they act in militarism and violence against female bodies, but when they act in solidarity.
Okay, I kind of lost it, because wasn't she advocating that Trayvon beat the blank out of Zimmy? And then, to translate a little more, then she's speaking out against males who commit sexual assault. Who was that magical speaker? Oh, that was Melissa Harris-Perry, the weekend voice face of MSNBC. Now, you talk about a big tent party. How about a big hug for her? More coming up next. And, Larry, thank you for that ever, ever, ever thorough weather forecast. Coming up next, Senator Risch. By the way, Melissa Harris-Perry was speaking to the folks at Cornell University. Imagine that. You spent all that money to hear that garbage. Good luck. God bless you.